Hello there, it's Jamila Jamil. Take a deep breath. Let your breath out slowly to the count of six. One, two, three, four, five, six. Do you feel better? Well, on my podcast, I Weigh, this month we'll be exploring ways to tackle mental health and feel better with guests like Simon Sinek from The Optimism Company, therapist Vianna Farren, comedian Neil Brennan, and many more. Listen to I Weigh wherever you get your podcasts.
TVI Say with Ashley Ray. Another episode of TVI Say with Ashley Ray. Another episode of TVI Say.
Welcome to TV I Say with Ashley Ray, your go-to podcast for discovering what to watch on TV and getting behind-the-scenes insight from the people who make the shows you love. And today I want to clarify, because when I say people who make the shows you love, I'm not talking about studio CEOs, okay? I'm not talking about David Zaslav or whatever. I am talking about writers. They write the shows you love. It's the first thing that has to happen before something happens. But you've probably already heard TV and movie writers are currently on strike against the major Hollywood studios. So to help give you all the lowdown on what's going on with the Writers Guild strike, I invited two super talented TV writers on the pod, Nicole Thurman and Nick Weiger. Welcome to TV Club.
Hi.
Hello.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
And will you two introduce yourselves? Nicole, what do you do?
Yeah, I'm like an actress, comedy writer, voiceover person. I've written on shows for Phoebe Robinson called Everything's Trash. I've written on like reality shows. I've written on Sherman Showcase, which is a sketch show. So I come from acting background, but now I'm more writing. So yeah.
I come from a writing background, and now I've shifted over more to podcasting. I feel like these days people most know me from my podcast Doughboys and Get Played. But yeah, I've written for TV a bunch. You know, I wrote for a Comedy Central show called At Midnight that's about to be rebooted on CBS. I wrote for a Sarah Silverman show on Hulu called I Love You, America. I wrote a Disney Plus show recently called Earth to Ned. And yeah, I've just kind of generally been working a string of jobs. The sector I work in is comedy variety, so sketch shows, talk shows, late night shows, award shows, specials, that sort of thing, for about a decade and change now.
Yeah, I mean, what I notice is you're both writers,
yes,
but you have other jobs.
Yeah.
Yes, huh. That's the thing.
What? Well,
yeah.
Seems like that might have something to do with the problem.
Yeah.
So why are the writers on strike? Let's just start there.
From what I'm getting and from what I'm kind of my perspective on it is that it's a job that is not being paid a living wage.
Right.
So people are not being paid nearly enough to create the shows that they create. And times have changed. They've gone from network TV shows where there's only a limited amount of channels and things to watch on TV to everything is streaming and there's a million shows being made. And I think that what hasn't caught up to the shows being made is how people are getting paid that create those shows.
Exactly.
And so I just think that the writers have reached this point where they came to a negotiation, their contracts are up, they're ready to like renegotiate, and they're trying to bring things into the 21st century. And the studios and network heads are like, no, thank you. We like to keep it how it is because like we make a lot of money and it's more fun when you guys make little change. So yeah, that's the main thing that I'm seeing.
Yeah, but I mean, Nick, you know, most people assume TV writers, you're billionaires.
Yeah.
You're all millionaires.
It used to be a more lucrative profession, and it's gotten to be sort of a thing where, you know, one of the stats I have is that 10 years ago, 33% of members of the union working in TV made the minimum. So contractually, that is the least amount they can pay you. Today, that number is up to 49%. So we've gone from a third of all TV writers making the minimum to half of all TV writers making the minimum. Now, extrapolate that number's not going down.
Right.
So it's like becoming a thing where, and in addition to compensation being lower, your contracts are getting shorter. And Nicole, I'm sure you've sensed that as well as on your end, is just
yes.
Like you're working for fewer weeks. So less money
yes.
per week, fewer
yeah.
weeks in a year.
Yeah.
How am I supposed to cobble together a living? Thus all the side hustles that everyone has.
Yeah, yeah. It's actually really interesting yeah. for me coming into this as an actor. Like I think I really started writing mostly in 2020. That was like when I fully was taking like staffing room jobs. And I noticed that it has even progressively gotten worse since I started doing it in 2020.
Right.
Yeah. It's like the rooms have gotten smaller. I've been in interviews where I finally, you know, was promoted to story editor on the last job I worked on. And I was like,
big
hell
deal.
Yeah,
yes.
Right?
Congrats.
Yes.
And then I go into an interview at the very end of the interview, they're like, by the way, the network is only hiring staff writers.
Yes.
And so I'm like, Well, that's a big pay cut. Not to mention, it's like you go through all this work. You're constantly being told, we don't have the budget to pay you X amount of dollars. And it's like, you do, though. You do. And so, yeah, I feel like it's a lot of fighting. You know, it's a lot of the money's all over the place for, you know, older white dudes writing versus like younger people of color, marginalized people coming in too. And I think that's also been a huge issue that I've noticed and that I've been really disappointed in.
You said 2020, and that is the big year that all the white people on Twitter were like, we got to get black people of color into the media and into Hollywood. And then they got us in and they were like, oh, you wanted us to pay you a lot too? Yeah. Oh, no.
Right. Yeah. The opportunity isn't like we welcomed you in. Isn't that enough? Yeah, that's the thing that I've seen in, even in my time in the Guild, you know, just like from basically 2011, 2013, somewhere in that range on, is that rooms have gotten, you know, more diverse, but as they've got like more diverse, compensation has fallen.
Yeah.
And so it's like kind of like the, I feel like it's an attitude that sometimes gets packaged with diversity from corporations, which is kind of like you're lucky to be here attitude. And so it's shitty. It really sucks.
Yeah, it's like one of those things where it's like, we had the meeting.
Right, we had the meeting.
We had the whole meeting. Everyone on diversity. Yeah. What do you want from us? And it's like, we want pay. We want pay.
We want to have a way to become story editors and be on set and become showrunners one day.
Yeah.
Another big issue is that we've gone from these 22-episode seasons to a show having 8 episodes, 10 episodes, so they're making smaller writer rooms. These days, the kids, they don't even remember 22-episode seasons. They don't even know how much TV we used to have.
That's so true.
Like, you would just watch so much of a show for so much of the year. And I miss that.
Yeah.
I know, as a viewer, obviously as a writer, I miss that. How do you feel about it?
Yeah, this episode of Lost, they're just going to kind of hang out on the beach for 44 minutes.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I guess so.
It's fucking true on the beach.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know. I feel like it's really interesting because it's become such a different experience of watching TV. Remember we used to have like Thursday night is like Friends or whatever the hell was on Thursday nights. And then Friday was, you know, TGIF. And you're what's that one where they have the roller coaster in the beginning? Like the step-to-step. Step-to-step. But yeah, it was more of an event. It was more of a thing. And I also was I was watching some documentary. I can't remember what it was. But it was also talking about famous people in the same way where it used to be like in the 90s. Oh, it was like Brooke Shields documentary.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Where it used to be in the 90s, we had like 10 famous people. And we were like, those are the famous people. And now it's just like millions and millions, you know, anybody.
And millions of people.
Yeah. And so it's just become such a different, like, there's no like excitement. We're not all like tuned into one thing anymore.
Yeah.
Right. I think the other thing, though, that's happened is that we've had, you know, the gulf has increased between the very top and, you know, the bottom line workers, like the people who are like, you know, kind of at who are working for minimums. Like, and partly that comes because it's like, hey, we've got this name showrunner and they're going to have all these shows and, you know, they're giving people opportunities. But it's like when they're actually employing the writing staffs, I'm not talking about the showrunners now, I'm talking about the studios, their compensation is lower and lower. So I think we're headed towards a, like we see so many places in our economy where it's just like there's the super rich and then there's just everybody else on the bottom.
Right. They've been talking a lot about the middle class and how there's no middle class.
There's no middle class of writers.
Yeah.
And I don't know. One of the things I thought was scary is that the studios came back and said that they want to give comedy writers a day rate for doing comedy and like late night, which as someone who I am not in the WGA, I'm in TAG, the Animation Guild, because there are all these little loopholes that shows you. So they aren't in the WGA and instead some animated shows are in TAG and we get paid even less. And so seeing that, I was like, oh no, they want to do to comedy what they're already doing to us animation writers, where I get like $200 to go write something for a day. They can't do that for late night.
No. And like, you were working in late night, so I'm in Comedy Central, right?
Yeah.
So it's like, I've had the same experience of working in late night where they renewed our contracts, I think every 13 weeks or something like that. And it's like, even that is stressful.
Yeah.
Right? You 100%. Have a job for 13 and you're like, oh God, am I going to get fired? Is the show going to cancel? Because they can do anything with these
contracts.
Yeah. And so to think that you have a day rate, like you could get fired on a Friday, started on a Monday.
On a certain, like,
right?
And that just shows how little value they put in the writers. Yeah.
They want it to be a gig. And it's like, how many gigs are we supposed to take? People are having families. They want insurance. They want to grow and have a stable life.
And also just work on one show for a while.
Right.
You know, when I hear older writers who are like, oh, I just got to work on Grace Under Fire for 4 years.
And you were
it's like, oh, the glory days.
Oh my God, sounds beautiful, right?
Yeah. I kind of love love some of those like older writers who are just like, they were like, we benefited from it and now I'm pissed off on your behalf. We've seen a lot of those people on the picket lines and that's been honestly really, really encouraging because they're aware of the generational divide and they're aware that like they got in while the getting was good and now today's writers like, you know, deserve what they used to have. Because the companies can afford it. These are the largest companies on earth. We're talking about Amazon. We're talking about Apple. These are like two of the biggest corporations on earth, period, not just in media.
Exactly. It's 3% of their annual revenue, all the studios. That's what the writers are asking for, just 3%.
Number I heard was 2%. Either way, it's like, that's a small percent.
So low.
And I think
that's a little irritating percent.
And then I think the AMTP came back and they were like, we looked at their math and actually it's more like 9%. It's like, are we supposed to believe that's too much?
We fold. You mentioned about TAG, which is the Animation Guild, which I'm also a member of. This kind of speaks to, and I think you used the word loophole, which is that these studios are like the masters of finding loopholes.
Yes.
So it's like, you know, like, hey, we want to pay. We have this new thing now that we call a mini room.
Yeah.
That's like, it's like a writer's room, but it's a tiny, teeny, tiny mini room. So you guys get a little teeny, tiny contract
ideas.
And a little bit of pay.
You're not
making
a mini show.
Exactly.
But
I've talked to people on the line who are like, I wrote an entire season of TV in a mini room. And they just sort of like ran with it.
The two shows I've written for, they were mini rooms, did a whole season. And it's like, okay, we're just going to act like it wasn't a whole season of TV. I want to ask, so, you know, if you're not familiar, every 3 years, the WGA, they negotiate a new contract with the Hollywood studios. Usually this just goes pretty smoothly. There have been, I believe, 4 other strikes like throughout history. There's like one in the 80s and one in the early 90s, maybe one in the 70s. Who knows?
2007 was the most recent.
Yes,
I know that much.
That's the most recent, and that's the one I want to talk about.
Yeah.
Because 2007 was the big one. The strike lasted 100 days. It started November 2007. Do you two remember where you were? What you were doing?
Well, I will say that I was in LA, but I was not in the Writers Guild yet. So I was like, oh, this is going on. I was conscious of it. But, you know, I was working in the video game industry. So, yeah, I wasn't yet a part of it.
Yeah, I wasn't either. I think I was living in Chicago or something. Like, I wasn't as involved in the industry as I am now. But I do remember that shift from, like, TV to reality TV. Because it was like, oh, well, these people don't know that they're going to get screwed.
These people aren't in a union. They don't have any. Yeah. This is all new.
Exactly. Yes. So we can take advantage of these people, pay them jack shit, and then, like, put them on TV. And that's TV now.
And come up with brilliant shows like Kid Nation.
I'll also say those shows should be covered. Those should be union as well.
Yes.
And then
they should be.
Another way they kind of get out of it is like, oh, this is
a loophole.
Exactly.
Yes, they have writers, but they're not really writers.
Exactly.
Yeah.
No, yeah. But what you were talking about, 2007, 2008 writer's strike birthed Celebrity Apprentice.
Yes.
So you can draw a direct line from studio intransigence and that work stoppage to the Donald Trump presidency.
Yeah. That,
like, but for real?
For real,
for real, though. It's like, you look at the ratings on The Apprentice in, like, 2007, they were going down. Advertisers were like, the show is done. It's so boring. We're not getting ad time. Mm-hmm. Clearly was going to be canceled. Writer strike happens, and NBC is just like, well, I don't know. I guess a lot of celebrities aren't in production right now. Want to just get them on a reality show with Donald Trump and... It blew up. It revitalized the brand.
Yep.
Kept it on air until, 2014?
Wild.
Survivor 46 is here, and so is On Fire, the only official Survivor podcast, and we have a twist this season. The winner of Survivor 45, Dee Valladares, will be joining us every week.
We're going behind the scenes of the biggest moments, the how and the why things happen, and the strategy and analysis you can only get from someone like me, a Survivor winner.
Listen to On Fire, the official Survivor podcast, wherever you get your podcasts.
MTV's official Challenge podcast is back for another season.
And so are we.
I'm Tori Deal.
And I'm Anissa Ferreira.
The wait is over, guys. All Stars 4 is finally here.
And this season takes it to a whole new level. Old school legends, modern power players, and ex-lovers are all competing in Cape Town, South Africa for the prize of $300,000.
And we're going to be right here along with you fans, covering every episode on the podcast.
Listen to MTV's official Challenge podcast wherever you get your podcasts.
Well, I've always said that reality TV was a direct pathway to Donald Trump being president. So I think that's amazing that you just said that, because it's true, though.
It's true. And it's how we got our sort of modern version of celebrity, because that's when the Kardashians started and we stopped going, oh, you know, reality TV is about, you know, your next door neighbor who can sing and go on American Idol and everybody's surprised. And it's more like this level of celebrity we get to look into now, this like level of class. It's not about the talent. It's just about the look.
Yeah, it's really, it's funny because the way we're talking about this, it reminds me of like dating. And you know how dating used to be like super analog? Like you'd meet somebody, fall in love,
fall
like
in
have
love.
Chemistry.
Yeah,
and be, like,
you'd
into
meet in the
it.
Grocery store.
Yeah, and you'd be like, I'm gonna sneak out. And then like all of a sudden, like OkCupid came out. And then ever since OkCupid, like dating has completely changed now. It's hookup culture now. Everything is super like, whatever the word is for like, nobody cares about anybody. Everybody's just kind of like, whatever, I can just go to the next thing. And I think it's like, once you get to that, it devalues the brand in a way. Mm. And so then people think less of it. But it's like, for us, the people that are creating it, working our asses off, I have to wear glasses now. I didn't have to wear glasses before. I wear glasses because I look at screens all day.
Yeah.
Like those people are like, oh, wait, hold up. Like we still need what we used to have, which is a home and a life.
And a life. Okay. We're not like these starving creatives. You should be able to have a career in writing.
Yeah.
One thing that I think is very different from 2007 to now, and the way this usually goes is, you know, the union strikes and then the studios put out a lot of misinformation.
For sure.
They work with the papers and the...
And all the big radio programs.
And all the big radio programs and the broadcast channels, and they get Dan Rather on. But they put out misinformation that tries to make the writers look bad. You're probably going to see a lot of stuff that's like, oh no, Stranger Things canceled. What will we do? Or, you know, pause for production. That's not the fault of the writers. That's the studio's fault for not giving the writers what they want. And back in 2007, it was hard for writers to fight against that messaging, you know? I feel like I'm so old. Back in 2007, we just had our internet news and, you know, no social media. So it was hard, you know? But now I feel like they're trying to do that. And the writers are just on Twitter like, hey, I'm the Duffer Brothers and we are standing with the union, and it's like you can't make them look bad.
Yeah.
And every TV writer today has like a podcast with a little army of fans who just want to see them paid well. So I'm curious, Nick, like you have a whole platform that you can use to be like, hey.
I guess I do. Okay, all right.
And it feels what like that's some doing? Power back
that's
in like
power.
The writer's pocket that
it
we
is,
have
though.
This time around.
And honestly, though, that's a great point. And, you know, social media, I think there's been a lot of excellent posting out there. Shout out Brittany Nichols, who I think is just has the best post in the game. And but like I have a podcast and I just talk about the strike on my podcast, and it's like the listeners totally get it because it's happening across industries.
Yeah.
And obviously you look at something like TV writing and like, look, this is a dream job for a lot of people. It was certainly a dream job for me. And it's not working at Starbucks. It's not working at, you know, at Chipotle. But like you look at the union movements that happen in those industries, it's the same sort of thing of like these are very profitable corporations that are not paying the workers who are essential, like who are the core part of their product. And so you have no choice there but to collectively bargain. And that's what's happening here. And the other thing I'll say, and I apologize for ranting a little bit here, but one thing that I've seen out on the picket lines is that all the other entertainment unions and other unions are coming out and supporting us and walking with us and saying they have our back. IATSE has been out there, who, you know, represents a lot of the crew that works on shoots. SAG-AFTRA has been out there in force.
Oh, yeah.
I've seen, you know, the laborers have been out there. And also we just had people like, you know, like a dude who works at Pizza Hut just came by our picket line and just walked with us. He was like, this is fucked up. And it's just like, yeah, it is. We had someone who came out to the picket line today. And she was a woman who, I'll just say she was the Karen demographic. And she was just kind of standing around. I went over to her and I talked to her. And she was like, my son drove me out here. I don't walk so well anymore, but I was a bus driver. Mm-hmm. I was on a strike in 1973. And I just wanted to come out to, I was in the transportation union. I just wanted to come out to support you. And it's just like, this is great that all of, you know, the plasterers, the steel workers are all supporting the same cause because it's the same struggle everywhere.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. LA is a union town.
Yes.
And
when
I've been out on the picket line, every bus driver honks their horn.
Yeah.
Every
Love
bus
that.
Driver, truck driver, they are honking that horn.
Right.
Yeah. 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 Because I think it is hard. It's tough because it's like people will see a TV writer, anybody that works in entertainment, and they're like, well, what are you complaining about? You work in entertainment. And it's like, absolutely, but that is a job and we should be striving to get the best out of our job. Just like if you're a teacher, you should be challenging the education system or if you're, you know, delivering packages for, you know, FedEx or whatever, you should be making sure that you guys are getting all of the things that you deserve. And I feel like that's part of like the messaging and people having these platforms now, because it is so easy for like, even, was it Deadline that put out that weird article that was like, guess what? You guys aren't going to have Stranger Things because there's a writer's strike. And it was like, it isn't because of the writer's strike.
The writers?
It's because they're treating employees like gig workers and offering $150 a day to write something. Yeah. And like, that's not okay. So yeah, I feel like it's been this like, it's been cool too, like you said, to see all these people, because I think it's I've seen it going both ways, where it's people being like, why are you complaining? You have no right to complain. It's like, well, listen, if you listen to what's actually happening, as opposed to just seeing someone in Hollywood and being like, but it's Hollywood. Yeah. Like, there really
George
is
R. Martin
a reason.
Doesn't need more money.
Yeah. Like, and it's like, you guys should all be fighting for more money as well. You should be fighting for better, you know, care, better healthcare, whatever it is that you need. Yeah.
And can we also get into residual pay? I think some people believe TV writers are rich because you write an episode and then every time it reruns, you get money, which is true. Mm-hmm. You know, that is true if you worked in the 90s and you wrote on Friends.
Right.
but today, now things are streaming. And in that 2007 negotiation, one of the things that they didn't really get was residual rights on streaming, video on demand for writers. So now you're probably writing a show for HBO Max or Netflix, and you're not getting money every single time someone watches that episode.
No. I will say, too, I was shook by that. Because the first show I wrote on was in 2020 for HBO Max. And then in 2023, I got the residuals for it. Which, first of all, that's crazy. That's 3 years later.
Yeah.
And then I looked at the checks and I was like, huh? It was 10 episodes of a show. And, I mean, we made $100 per episode. And I think that's actually good residuals for what I've been hearing. And so, but that's $1,000 for writing a whole TV series. You know what I mean? And as an actor, I can definitely see the difference in residuals. It does not... you're not being compensated. I remember, too, when commercials first started going online to, like, Hulu and whatnot, they were paying people as if they were web series.
Right.
And we're like, excuse me, this is not a web series. This is a national commercial that people are seeing a million times. And so that has been worked out now so that you actually get paid. And so to me, it's just like, of course you should raise residuals. People should get a bigger percentage of what they're creating. Of course.
Yeah.
But they're still fighting back.
And, in fact, they don't even tell the viewership numbers to the showrunners, right? They keep that all secret.
A lot of that stuff is just under lock and key. I mean, that's an information asymmetry where it's just like they, you know, knowledge is power is the cliche. They are more powerful because they have that information and it's not being dispersed. I think that, yeah, that needs, we need transparency there. We need to know how many views these things are getting. And then if they're monetizing things again and again, as they have when they re-air, say, a show in syndication, if they're using this to, you know, drive viewership because it's re-airing on their streaming service, then yes, the people who create it should be compensated for
it. Yeah, and it drives me crazy, especially with Hulu, because if you watch an old program on a Hulu, they will still put commercials in it.
Right.
Even if it's on Netflix without commercials, on Hulu, they will run ads in it. And it's like, I know you're making more money off of this.
Yes.
Give it to the writers.
Yeah. That's the thing, is like seeing those types of things and knowing that they have that money and knowing that at this point, the majority of TV is streaming and you can put ads in it and you guys are obviously raking it in. So it's like, give a, you know, 2%, 3%, whatever it is, it's nothing.
It's nothing.
That's a great point that, like, yeah, TV is streaming now.
Yeah.
That's the whole, that, like, that's what the model has changed to. And so, and also we see things where they'll air something that's streaming and then they'll re-air it on linear television. Yeah, exactly.
Oh my gosh. Which, you know, I do think is going to be what we see maybe this summer when they all run out of content or in the fall, if that's, you know, how long this goes. They did that in 2007. People might remember they aired edited versions of Dexter on CBS. One of my favorite 2007 strike notes is just there were truly people who were watching Dexter on CBS like, how did someone just get killed? We didn't see any murder or blood.
They took an hour-long show and edited it down to 22 minutes.
Right? Oh, my God.
Wow.
So there are some people who are like, okay, fine. The studios have money. They can give you money. Mm-hmm. But why won't you writers shut up about this artificial intelligence thing? Mm. That's been a big sticking point in this year's negotiations. Obviously, was not something that came up in 2007, wasn't really something that came up 3 years ago, because the studios were just like, we don't really know where this technology is going. And now today, they're still trying to go, well, we don't really know where this technology is going. And the last time they did this was 2007 with streaming platforms.
Right.
Wow.
They were like, we don't really know where streaming is going, so we don't want to pay you residuals on it. And now it's, well, we don't know what's going to happen with AI, which is kind of a big giveaway, you know?
Right. They're going to be looking.
They're going
right.
to be looking. Right. And, you know, more... more actors are seeing AI clauses in their contracts. This is clearly something the studios want to take advantage of. And, you know, mostly what I'm seeing on Twitter are people who are just like, whatever, you human writers suck anyway, and I want the robots to write everything.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But can you explain why this is such an important point for the Guild to stay focused on?
It's fundamentally still about money. Because anytime industry can automate labor and replace it with a machine, they will do that. And so that's because that saves money on labor cost. And so it's their ultimate goal. Now, this technology is still fundamentally in its infancy, especially when applied to like writing like narrative. Like it just it isn't quite up to the job yet. But they're going to be looking to do this. And so that's part of the reason we need to get it into contract language, like towards what you were saying. If they don't want to talk about something, that means it's something that we have to talk about. If we went along with what they were saying back in 2007, if the writers who were before me went along with what they were saying and just sort of like, okay, we won't talk about the internet. Let's figure out DVD residuals, because that's the big thing right now.
Yeah.
We got to lock in a good number here. You had to be focused on the future as well as the present. And so I think it's a great thing to address.
Absolutely. I feel like that's been something that's been coming up in different industries across the board. And then you see these videos of like actors that aren't really there, but the AI is creating them in a place.
And moving their mouth.
Yeah,
and
moving
it's like,
their mouths.
That's creepy.
And it looks real. And so it's just like, that is something that needs to be worried about, just like what you said, because we said we weren't going to worry about streaming and now here we are. So it's like, we need to look to the future. We need to look, we need to think of like, as like an evil, like, you know, twisting the mustache guy on the train tracks. Like, what would he be doing?
Yeah, what would the villain be doing?
He's working with the robots. He's working with them. And so, so it's like, we have to get ahead of it, because they really will just start feeding scripts into, you know, AI, have it read 1,000 pages, and then
The other thing is, like, writers, we don't want AI trained on our scripts.
Yeah,
right.
If these studios own them and they're just feeding them into the ChatGPT machine, what is that? What does that mean exactly for the future
and for art? I mean, it sounds,
and for,
you know,
art. Yeah,
for art, it's art. Like, are we really gonna have machines that's like doing that's like math projects making art? Doesn't math to me? You know,
You know, the only thing I like to see CGI and AI on is if it's the last season of the Goldbergs and they are CGI entering Jeff Garlin.
Yes.
Into a wedding scene, and then I'm all for it.
Give me all that you got.
Yeah, give it to me then.
Absolutely unhinged and I love it. Yeah, so good. So
we're just like, I don't need to believe that's a real human.
No.
So another thing that we're, you know, kind of all fighting for are greater minimum pay across the board. Can you kind of explain for people what that means? Because I think a lot of people don't realize that, you know, there are these minimums. It's not like you get into writing and the studios can be like, here's $3 million.
Yes, I can take that one actually as an actor that recently transitioned to writing, because I'm telling you, I was like, these checks are good. And I was like, this is money. Like, you know, if you do, you know, a voiceover job, you don't get nearly the money that you get as right. But that was the thing that's the thing that gets people caught up, is you're hearing $4,000 or $5,000 a week is the minimum. Somebody had a really great tweet about this. Like, okay, so $4,000 to me was what I thought the minimum was. So if you're getting $4,000 as a staff writer, we forget that these things are being taxed. They're being, you have to give 10% to your agent, 10% to your manager. And if you have a lawyer, 5% to your lawyer. So there's 25% more of your paycheck and 10% they took for taxes.
Yeah.
And then with, you know, rent is absolutely insane. I mean, I was looking for new apartments today and I was like, this is a joke. I'm not going to do this anymore.
Yeah.
So it's like, you forget how easily your money can be completely just dispersed so quickly. And so it's like, if you're only working for 9 weeks in a room making $5,000, that's only $45,000. And you might not work for a year,
two, three.
I haven't had a WGA job in a year. I've been saving my money like a little squirrel with their nuts, because like, you don't know what's going to happen with your career. It's not guaranteed. And the rooms are so short.
I think that's the key point, is that because, you know, like it's a lot of money per week. But, you know, if you look at that over the course of a contract, like how long a contract is, if you're not on a show that's ongoing, if you're there for, you know, I was on a limited contract that ended at the start of March 2020. And then we know everything. everything that happened then. So it was like, oh, okay, so that was my chunk of writing income that's going to sustain me through this global pandemic. And, you know, that sort of shit comes up. So it's a very uncertain field. But also, where do you want the money going? Do you want, because like, here's the thing, if they're not paying the writers, if they're not paying the actors, if they're not paying the crew, if they're not paying the people who make this content, they're not just like giving that money to charity.
Right.
They're keeping it for themselves. So do you want it going to the CEOs or do you want it going to the writers? Do you want it going to the actors? Do you want it going to the gaffers and the cameramen and the directors and the makeup artists and the costumers? It's the same sort of thing that I think starts to happen with like, you know, athlete unions where people are like, these spoiled rich athletes, just like, do you want the owners to have more fucking money? Do you want Steve Ballmer, who's stomping his feet courtside, to have more billions? Like, or do you want the people who are actually playing the game, who are creating the product that you enjoy, to be compensated for it?
It's one of those industries where it's like you see the front facing people of the movement, and if you disagree, you're going for them. But it's like, don't go for us.
Yes.
Yeah.
Go for, you know,
go
head of Netflix and his 15th yacht or whatever.
Go for them and their like 300 billion whatever salaries. It's not the writer.
We're hoarding our 10 weeks of pay, maybe, just in case we don't work for 3 more years. They're hoarding millions and billions of dollars that they're making by not giving it, dispersing it to the people that are creating their work.
Exactly.
I got so riled up during my rant and spoke coffee all the
time. Oh my God.
you can't see it, okay, listeners, but he was riled.
Yeah.
Lots of gesticulation. So
there are people who will say, okay, I get it. Writers, you need a living wage. Fine. I don't live in LA. I don't live in Hollywood. This doesn't impact me. Why should I care? There's already too much TV. I need time to keep up, to catch up with my TV. So you guys could strike for forever. I don't care. Or I just watch old episodes of The Office anyway. I don't like new TV. Why should I care?
My favorite was someone sent me a New York Times comment that was a guy saying, like, entertainment peaked with Greek tragedy. All right.
I love that one. Yeah, I've been getting so many DMs that are just like, TV today sucks. There hasn't been a good TV show made in the last 5 years. And then I just replied with like Barry, Succession, Abbott Elementary, all these shit. And he just went, damn, you're right. Never mind.
Like, okay. What's the thing where it's like the first they came for the blah, 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 and I said nothing. Then they came for the da, 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 and I said nothing. I'm obviously very smart in quoting this. But you know what I'm talking about? It's the same concept as it is in politics. It's like, oh, I don't care about, immigration because I'm not an immigrant. But guess what? You know, it's going to come to your door eventually in some way, shape, or form. Including, you know, your TV could be written by AI and you don't want it. Like, come on, stop playing. But it really is, I think, that everybody needs to understand that you should never just take shit lying down. You should never just sign the first contract you get. You should never accept the first offer. And I think a lot of people, because it's that scarcity mindset, they're like, well, I gotta take it. And so I think that I would hope that people would see something like this and be inspired to do it in their line of work in whatever way that is. And so I think that, sure, it doesn't affect you. But first of all, yes, it does, because it's pop culture. We literally create pop culture.
Yes.
And then second of all, it's going to come to you in some way, shape, or form when you get fucking, when they sit you down for a review and then they don't give you a promotion because they don't have the money right now.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. Something doesn't have to be for you for it to be popular and profitable.
Exactly.
So it's like, so I don't really pay attention to the MCU, but that's like a huge, you know, thing that a lot of people are huge fans of. And notoriously, Marvel is not great about compensating the people who work for them. Again, that comes from Disney Plus. I talked to an IATSE lighting tech who worked on a Marvel show, and he's just talking about how onerous the working conditions were and how poorly he was paid. And it's like, you know, just because something's not for you does not mean that the people who make it should not be benefiting from its success.
Yeah.
And I think there's also a larger issue, and I think this speaks to what Nicole was getting towards, which is like, this is about labor in America.
Yeah.
And, you know, some of the most encouraging things I've seen as a big union guy over the past few years have been like Amazon warehouses unionizing. I mentioned Starbucks and Chipotle unionizing, Burgerville up in Portland, a local chain restaurant unionized. When we see that happening, like, that is great for everybody because it asserts the strength of the worker versus ownership. And it's the same sort of thing with WGA. Is like, we are a very visible union. We are a reasonably powerful union in the context of America. So be rooting for us because we are you. Mm-hmm. We are also workers.
Mm. And also, if you like those old episodes of The Office, guess what? They were written by staff writers. Staff writers who probably could make more shows you like if they could get a living wage writing shows.
Right.
You know, they don't have. I think there was a story of one black guy who wrote for The Office for like 3 seasons and he had to work at Macy's after. And it's just like, that's the reality for so many of us.
Absolutely. I was literally, I mean, before the strike even started, I was like, okay, time to get a survival job. Just like, I got to plan it. Because you're constantly planning ahead for like poverty.
Yeah,
you know,
poverty.
For like when you run out of money, it's a terrifying way to live. And I can't even imagine if I had kids. Like, I just, you know, no.
Yeah,
a
no,
dog
no.
is enough for me. I can't.
Yeah.
I'm like, okay,
no,
you're
you.
Kind of cheap, so I'm good with you. Yeah, I mean, it's crazy.
Yeah. And, you know, a lot of people say about 2007, TV got worse. It made TV worse. One of, you know, the big examples they always use are Heroes.
Sure.
Friday Night Lights, Grey's Anatomy, which all had huge drops in quality. I think that's, you know, what the fans noticed. I don't know that today people will notice that because we don't have 22 episode seasons. Like, there aren't things that are going to be being written while things are on air. Abbott Elementary is probably the only one that would have come close, and they shut down production. But what I do think is maybe kind of important, and what we saw this week, is that the studios are now trying to cancel their overall deals with certain creators. And so this is kind of the one thing they have that they can do.
Yeah.
Is, you know, I think a lot of fans, I know personally, when I hear about an overall deal with someone I love, I get so excited about it. Say there's someone out there who's like, I am so happy Lena Waithe has a deal with Prime Video, you know? Yeah. And Amazon, and this, they go, well, we're canceling all of our overall deals because the writers won't write. And it's like, yeah. That is work that now will not exist. They did this back in 2007. We saw tons of writers who are amazing, worked on wonderful shows, lose their overall deals. And there was just like this just lack of content and like quality shows for like 2 to 3 years. Can you kind of explain for people, like, what is an overall deal? Like, what, why is that something that matters?
What I can bring this back to is that it's, this is the same playbook that they always do. And that's what we can at least look at from the 2007-2008 strike. Like you were saying, they did that same thing. So, like, you know, we know what their moves are and we understand that they're going to deploy them cynically.
Yeah.
Typically, overall deals are people who have, you know, some prominence and some success in the industry and, you know, are kind of just like, you're just kind of on the hook to help develop stuff for us, to create content for us, and we're going to pay you over the period of this deal. And so when they have a work stoppage like this, a lot of times I feel like that's used as an excuse, right?
Yeah.
It's just like they were looking to do this anyway, and now they have a thing they can point towards and then try to, again, blame their workforce for it.
Yeah.
And it's also a way to try to divide the workforce.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And also, you know, there are other entertainment groups and unions that are impacted by this who could be manipulated with that kind of messaging when there are like hair and makeup teams who are like, I am being hurt by your strike because I can't get work. And I've only really seen that so far at Netflix. There were 3 counter protesters, but otherwise everyone has been coming together so like wonderfully.
That's what's encouraging. It's just, you know, again, you see people out there. I was talking to a prop master. I was talking to a costumer. You know, they're coming out and they're picketing with us because they know they have their own struggle. And, you know, like DGA has their deal expiring, SAG after the Actors Union, their deal expires at the end of June.
Mm-hmm.
We might be on the picket line at the same time because they're trying to.
I hope so.
Again, I would love that shit.
Yeah.
They're trying to get the middle class everywhere.
Yeah. And I think the Directors Guild is theirs. Up?
DGA. Yeah. Directors
DGA
Guild
is up, too.
Is up soon. Yeah.
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 Are you excited? Are you hoping you're double striking?
Yeah, I'll be double striking. Yeah, I pretty much already am. I mean, I was supposed to record a voiceover today. I can't record it because we don't have any writers. You know what I mean? So it's already hitting us. It's already hitting the actors. And I think also, speaking of like overall deals, I think what people don't always think of is how the machine is never done. The machine hasn't stopped.
Yeah.
Like you're saying, like people are like, well, I got to catch up on my 10 episodes of whatever anyway, so it doesn't matter. It's like, sure, but like you do understand that TV takes a very long time to get made.
Okay.
Yeah. Like these people with the overall deals are working on shows that you might see in 5 years or working on shows you'll never see.
But regardless,
they're pitching all the time. And I think that's stopping. And people don't understand that when we roll around to like what, the fall, it's going to be, you know, a mess.
It's gonna be
It
might not be as bad as Heroes or says the second season of Friday Night Lights, but it's gonna be bad.
What happened with the second season of Friday Night Lights?
Oh my gosh.
I've never seen it.
Oh, it basically happened during the 2007 writer's strike.
Mm-hmm.
And they decreased the episode order. And you could tell they had a lot of big plans for that season. There's like a murder plot that gets started, all this stuff. And you're like, oh, where's this all going to go? And then just to clean it all up, they have this character who Landry, who is the most docile person, played by
Jesse Plemons.
Yes, Jesse Plemons, just like the sweetest boy, and they have him commit a murder.
I only literally only know that for because I've been seeing that meme go around.
Yeah, where it's like the last time there was a writer's strike, Landry killed someone.
Yes!
And that's like the moment that season went off the rails and was so bad that the next season they were just like, let's just not even ever talk about that again. Like, they just moved on from it. Kind of like Heroes did, where they had like all these plot lines up in the air and they were just like, you know what? We never have to go get Peter's Irish girlfriend back from her timeline. Let's just let that go.
Hilarious.
So, you know, I think some of the strike TV was brilliant in how bad it was.
Yeah.
You know, we got Kid Nation. We got a shot at Love with Tila Tequila.
Right.
Yeah,
great. Endearing shows.
Yeah.
One more thing on that. A lot of people, I think, don't realize that Jeopardy is WGA. Those are union writers.
Right.
And I've been walking the line with a lot of Jeopardy writers. Like, they're going to run out of Jeopardies at a certain point.
Yeah, absolutely.
So it's like you talk about the content pipeline just needing to continue. Like, at a certain point, they're going to run out of shit. And it's not like the studios are going to stop making scripted content for all time. At a certain point, they need more stuff.
Yeah.
And I think that's a big part of our leverage.
And, like, Late Night is already
shut down.
Nicole Byer was telling me about how, like, Nailed It, you're saying, like, these reality shows that are reality competition shows, they can't work. They have writers on them that are WGA, and they can't do it.
Yeah.
So it is like, oh, I'll just watch, you know, I don't know, Shaq shoot a basketball. I don't know why that was my first thought. I'm apparently in 1996.
That sounds
like, I'll just watch that.
2 months from
like,
now, that's going to be on NBC.
Yeah, exactly.
Shaq shoot a basketball.
Shaq shoots basketballs. And it's just Shaq, you got nothing to say because nobody's writing for him. Yeah. And I would say also something that's been really cool that I've seen, speaking of like double strikes or just affecting other industries, is like support workers, like people literally like writer's assistants who make very little money, work very hard and are immediately now out of jobs, which could easily be like, I don't know how to pay rent next month. And so that's been a good, but they have also been on board with this because they know that like this is a tough time, but it will benefit us in the future. And like, we can make this better. We just have to kind of buckle down right now and work for it.
And I feel like from what you're saying, a lot of people don't understand shows like Jeopardy have writers, reality shows. WGA was going to picket the MTV Fan Awards, I believe. They announced it, and within like 20 minutes, MTV was like, never mind, we're canceling it. We'll just do a streaming award show. Can you explain how those types of shows have writers? Because there were so many, you know, teenagers who don't know, who are just like, why are the writers ruining my best MTV Kiss Award moment?
I think it's funny about that kind of stuff because I wrote on a couple award shows and I think that's funny. I don't think I had even ever thought about how much writers are involved in that, but my God, those people aren't saying one word that they are thinking. You know, just they're reading off of prompters, the games and the bits where somebody comes into the audience and delivers pizza that was created by a writer. You know, like anything you see that goes viral and you're cracking up over it, unless it's like some random drunk celebrity wandering on stage and saying something. Writers are creating this and they, you know, you work your ass off pitching like jokes all day, every day. And so that's not something that can go on without writers. Yeah. And I just think what's so hard to always remember is it's not us causing the problem. Like, we're the ones that make, like, the memes that you see, the jokes that you make with your friends, the that's what she says, those type of things, they don't just come from nowhere. They come from writers creating it. And, the award shows are very much writers.
You think the celebrities can be charming
live
on camera at an award show? No.
Hell no.
They have writers making them seem charming and so relatable in their speeches. Come on.
Like giving them their little quips and their little bits.
I
actually wrote for the MTV Movie Awards previously, and I would say, if anything, there was too much writing going on in that show at a certain point. I was like, guys, can we relax? What are we doing?
Come on, that's we can hilarious. Just give out the golden popcorn.
Yeah.
Like, let's ease up on it.
MTV's official Challenge podcast is back for another season.
And so are we.
I'm Tori Deal.
And I'm Anissa Ferreira.
The wait is over, guys. All Stars 4 is finally here.
And this season takes it to a whole new level. old school legends, modern power players, and ex-lovers are all competing in Cape Town, South Africa for the prize of $300,000.
And we're going to be right here along with you fans, covering every episode on the podcast.
Listen to MTV's official Challenge podcast wherever you get your podcasts.
Survivor 46 is here, and so is On Fire, the only official Survivor podcast, and we have a twist this season. The winner of Survivor 45, Dee Valladares, will be joining us every week.
We're going behind the scenes of the biggest moments, the how and the why things happen, and the strategy and analysis you can only get from someone like me, a Survivor winner.
Listen to On Fire, the official Survivor podcast, wherever you get your podcasts.
Something I've also noticed is that I think today the way TV is made is so removed from the viewer. Like, back when this was happening in 2007, I had an idea of like, oh, there's a showrunner in a writer's room and this is how it kind of goes. And nowadays, people truly will be like, Donald Glover wrote every single episode of Atlanta.
Right.
The actors weren't acting. They were just geniuses who were ad-libbing the whole time.
Right.
And so people aren't seeing the value of the writer. They're really just like, what do you need that for? Like, Issa Rae wrote all of Insecure. Why would you need 12 writers?
Right.
Why do you think that has happened? Do you think it's because the studios know they benefit from just making the viewer as ignorant about that as possible?
I think so. But I also think that showrunners are more visible nowadays. Like, I always would see like Marta Kaufman and whoever the other person was for Friends.
Yeah.
Was that? Yeah. Like, you would see that, but you wouldn't necessarily know. But now it's like, I know, you know, what Issa Rae looks like, and she's a celebrity in her own right. David Simon is a celebrity in his own right. These showrunners, it could seem like there isn't this big, you know, production going on behind the scenes. And so you just think, and I think that also, I don't know, what I've noticed as an actor and a writer sometimes is like, something will go viral or be memeable, and you'll never see an actor be like, yo, that was the writer. The writer's fucking funny. You know what I mean? Like, you'll never see that. They'll be like, thank you so much.
Yeah, it really was funny when I did that.
There's just like a little bit of like erasure of writers. But I do think that because people aren't seeing that, and because they're so used to like the bloopers and the, you know, they think that's behind the scenes, but it's actually like we're pitching line after line after line on set too.
On set.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's also, you know, kind of sometimes the nature of the job. Like, the person saying the line is, in certainly comedies, the person is going to get the laugh or is going to get the reaction in anything. But the people writing the line should at least be compensated. And fundamentally, I think that's what it's about. To what you're talking about like, you know, room sizes getting smaller and like, you know, an auteur showrunner writing every episode. You know, there are some people who wanted to do that workflow. I will say that one thing that we should note is that the number of writers required in a room in the current contract is zero. So, like, they can say, like, hey, there's, you know, and so there are showrunners who want to not have a staff, but there are a lot of showrunners who have no say over how large their staff is. And there are a lot of like, for every one showrunner who gets to be like, oh, I just want to write everything myself, there are 20 or 30 or 50 who are being given this a writer's room the size that the network says they can have, that the studio says they can have. Mm-hmm. And so I think it's important to preserve those jobs so that people who do want to have a room can have one.
Yeah. And could you give listeners an idea of, like, what is the writer's room process like? Yeah. I think a lot of people just think, what, you sit around eating snacks and making jokes about high school? Like,
yeah, that's right. Got a problem with that?
I mean,
actually, yes.
That's all you do.
And also, there's a whiteboard usually. maybe some post notes. It's like, yeah.
Yeah. I think that it's been interesting for me just learning that process because I was on my first narrative room. That was the last job I did. And it was like, I mean, it's such a process. Mainly just breaking the story, just deciding what's going to happen in every single episode, working together by pitching, you know, story ideas or just jokes and riffing together and creating, like, literally the outline and the template for every episode of, like, this is going to happen. And then eventually after kind of you're all pitching together, which that's why I love a big writer's room because it's like, that's where the jokes are made, man. That's why they're
punched up. The diversity of ideas.
Diversity of ideas. And, like, your characters have different voices because of it. And so, yeah, it's like after that's done, a writer will go off and write, you know, script it by themselves, but then it'll come back to the room and then everybody in the room will rewrite it and punch it up. And it's something that to me, I come from like Second City, Chicago world. And so it's like very improv, like, you know, six people create a thing together and you always have each other's backs. And so to me, it's like, I think that that process is so necessary, like that you have to have different voices and different people creating so that the products can be the best it is.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's a collaborative medium, TV and film, like at every level. And it's, you know, the PAs and the production designers and the costumers and the makeup artists and the actors, like everyone is collaborating and that extends to the writer's room. And I always feel like just like, you know, two brains beats one, eight brains beats two. Like you just want more minds in there to try to you know, crack a story or beat a joke or just, you know, I don't know. I mean, like, this process has endured for a long time, I think, for a reason. I don't think it's just path dependency. I think it is like this is the best way to craft something where you need a lot of episodes or you have like an ongoing narrative arc over a season or multiple seasons. I think you just need lots of bodies in there to try to crack this thing.
Think yeah. about how many freaking people on Twitter want to tell you how to have the next episode of your show be.
Right, right, right.
It's the same damn thing. It's like you guys are doing what we're doing. We're saying like, yeah. no, I don't think you should go there.
I don't think that's
should,
work.
You know.
And you're working with all these people to make it happen.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely.
I love it.
Me too.
So you're both on strike right now. Yeah. You're not writing. Is there anything you're watching right now? You got any strike TV watch lists? Is there anything you're doing with all this new free time?
My wife and I are watching Yellow Jackets, and we have been ongoing. Love season one. Still on board with season two. Interested to see where it's going. The other show we've been watching is on Freevee, which is at what you can get on Amazon Prime. Jury Duty.
Oh yeah,
Jury Duty cracks me up.
It's so good.
It's really
amazing,
good.
Amazing cast.
Yeah.
David Brown, who is just so funny, is in it. And Shrimp Boy is a really good comedian. I was so just surprised by that show.
Yeah.
I didn't know what to expect. At first, I was just like, oh, I'm going to be uncomfortable with this because they're being so mean to this like guy who doesn't know. And then by the end, you're just like, he's the most precious person in the world.
Yeah.
I still haven't seen that show, but I did interview it for it and for a writing position for it. And I was like, what? Huh? I didn't even understand how they would do it.
Yeah.
And apparently
yeah.
they did it so well.
So
it's
well.
Like incredible.
And you see the scripts and how they had so many just like, okay, if he says this, we'll do this. If he says this, we'll do this. Maybe we can get him to do this. And just all of these backup plans and just being able to like pivot so quickly.
Yeah.
It's incredible.
Yeah. So the actors are all like improvising different characters and like the one guy that they're pranking, it's the one guy who, for anyone who hasn't seen the show, it's like one guy on a jury who is just like a real person who thinks it's an actual trial that's being filmed. And like you were saying, like he's so wholesome and whatever work they did to figure out like that this was the guy to center it around. It's so because like you're just so worried like, oh, don't say something problematic. Don't, you know, like don't make
don't
me dislike
rude,
you.
Don't be mean.
But he's so wholesome. At a certain point, like one of the characters, one of the actors who's playing a character who's kind of like, you know, kind of a nerdy guy. He's like, I'm going to show him A Bug's Life because this movie is about how you can like use your own talents to like stand out in
to
a crowd.
Stand out and still be like,
yeah.
He literally for each person was just like, oh, this guy, like he's actually going through a separation with his wife. And he's like, we'll always be there for you, man. Like even after this. And I'm just like thinking how I'd be in that situation where I'd be like, yo, buddy, you got to vote. Like, just no.
Right.
I would not have gotten the money at the end.
Oh, did he get money at the end
Yeah.
too?
So at the end, they're like, and because you were like such a good person, and like had a pure heart
uh-huh.
and all this, like, so James Marsden is in it and plays like a big part, and my favorite thing is that you can tell this guy really wants to be friends with James Marsden.
Yes.
He just thinks
it.
It's so cool. And he is just like, I gotta go hang with James, man. I gotta go help James. I'm doing this with Marsden. And then slowly James Marsden does the best job just like turning into this asshole like over time, and still the guy just like will not like flip on him, won't tell everybody that he's being a jerk. He's still just like, okay, James. Like, and you see him kind of fed up and he's just like still... Yeah, it's incredible.
Great. I love that.
Yeah.
I like that he's not really familiar with a lot of Marsden's work, but he's like, you're the guy from Sex Drive.
Yeah.
Like, wait, that's the kind
of and made it, yeah, and bought it and like asked him to sign it.
That's adorable.
Yeah.
Are you watching anything, Nicole?
I've been watching Succession.
Ugh.
I can't. It's so good.
It's so good.
It's so good.
And this last episode.
Yeah.
Ooh, it was spicy.
It was spicy. And I think it's like, that's one of those shows to me that almost feels improvised. It feels so quick and so smart. And it feels like they're just playing. But then you realize like it's all scripted and it's just incredible. Like it just flies by so fast.
Just so fast.
That some of those jokes, I'll be like, like literally will fly by me. And I'm like, oh yeah, that was funny. You know, it's, and the drama of it, the episode, you know, I don't know, episode 3 for giving away spoilers or what, but like, it was just, they said they shot it like once the regular way you shoot TV where it's just like scene by scene. And then one time they went through it, all 27 minutes of it. And I'm just like, that's one shot, my shit.
That's the stuff I love.
Yeah, it's just been really good. And I mean, it's obviously everybody loves that show, but like seeing how it's kind of going to wrap up has been very good.
Yeah.
It's good.
One of the shows where I'm like, oh, if you like that show and the people who write it, you should probably support the Writers Guild.
Yeah.
And then maybe they can write other shows you'll like.
That's the thing, yeah.
That's the thing that we all hope for. If you want to support the writers, anyone in LA or New York can join a picket line or drop off food and water. That's anyone. If you're a fan of television, if you want to be a writer someday, pre-WGA, if you're in another guild, another union, anyone can come out to support. You can also donate money to the Entertainment Community Fund, which helps non-writer Hollywood crew members. You know, all those costumers we were talking about, the prop masters, those people who are suffering hardships due to the strike. This is the fund for them. You just go donate at entertainmentcommunity.org and make sure to direct your gift to the film and television category when asked.
I'll say something about that because I worked with them like a couple of years ago. Every like 2 years, I'm like, I'm going to be a teacher. I got to do something different with my life. Like every, you know, couple years.
Sure.
Because that's just how I roll. If I even sense a little bit of a pause in my career, I'm I'm dying. No, but I did work with them. Like they offer a ton of programs. Also like, you know, they teach you how to be a teaching artist. And like they work with dancers to get them in new careers when they kind of get too old to be dancers. And like, they have a lot of different programs. And as soon as you go in there, it's like they're immediately there to help you. They help you with your resume. They help you look for jobs that you never considered. It's just one of those places that like I highly recommend donating to, and I highly recommend for people who like might feel weird about going in there because they're like, I don't know, like go, because it's, even if you don't end up being a teaching assistant in a high school or a teaching artist in high school, like I was trying to do that, but even if you don't end up doing that, you at least know that you have, like, you're empowered by it, like you have the, you know, the resources to get the kind of skills, the training, and you can write your resume for it.
That's amazing. I really just thought they were like, I don't know, here's money for rent for a while. So.
Yeah, they do all of that. And they give money to people who need it. So, yeah, it's like, it's very important.
Yeah, I mean, that aspect of it right now, that's awesome context to know about the org. But that aspect right now is, like, I think the focus of this donation drive. Because, you know, as we're talking about earlier, you know, there's writer's assistants, there's writer's PAs, there's set PAs, there's script supervisors, there's script coordinators. There's a bunch of writing adjacent jobs where, you know, people are potentially going to be struggling as the stoppage continues. And so it would be great to have people support there.
Yeah. So, you know, we don't know how long this one's going to last. Could go 100 days like 2007. Who knows?
Who knows?
Who knows? Nicole, Nick, thank you so much for joining me. Do you have any final thoughts, things you want to plug?
What a treat. Thank you so much for having
me.
Thank you. Yeah, this was great.
Love just getting angry.
Yeah, really. Get fired up, spill coffee on yourself, get fired up, go back into the world.
Yeah, again, anyone wants to join a picket line, you can join if you're in New York or LA, WGAcontract2023.org, and there is a picket schedule and location. We're out there most days, 9 to 5, so just come on by. I have a podcast about chain restaurants called Doughboys. I have a podcast about video games called Get Played. Check those out. And also, I want to shout out Ross Kimball, who's on jury duty, a buddy of mine. He's great.
Yeah.
He's on jury duty the show or jury duty in real life right now?
Good question to ask.
Maybe both. I don't know. But he's definitely on the show.
Ross. I didn't know he's on that show. That's why I said that. I was like, I didn't know. Follow me on Twitter, Instagram. Yes. I like followers. I do voiceovers for a show called Jellystone on HBO Max that we do have like 2 seasons up there. And then Tuning Out the News. We'll pick that up after the strike, but it'll still be there.
Yeah. So, love Tuning Out the News. Yeah. Wonderful group of writers there. Also, if you can't make it to the picket line, but you're in New York or LA, when you drive past, honk your horn. Honk it
love
loud.
Truly.
Love a honk. Every time you honk a horn, a TV writer gets their wings and a studio exec gets a migraine. So you should do it. Thank you so much for joining me today. Thank you.
What a hoot.
Thank you.
TV I Say with Ashley Ray, another episode. episode, another episode.
TV I Say with Ashley Ray is an Earwolf production made by me, Ashley Ray Harris. It's engineered by Abby Aguilar, produced by Scott Sani, executive produced by Amelia Chapelo, and our original theme song is by Rafia. It means so much to me if you go rate, review, subscribe, follow TV I Say. Let us know what you think and tell your friends. Share with your golden girls, tell your boys. If you love my TV recommendations, let everyone you know know. For special TV Club members, join my Patreon. And you can also find my full archive ad-free episodes of TV I Say over on Stitcher Premium. Use promo code TV I Say, all one word, for a 1-month free trial at stitcher.com/premium.